You are listening to The Pulse, Rod Murray's e-learning tech podcast, number 128.
Hi, this is Rod Murray. Welcome back. Welcome back to my podcast. That teaser was from a song called Comcast Connection Blues by Miller and Prillo from Music Alley. And I thought this was very appropriate considering that I talk a lot about e-learning and connections and distance learning. And for those of you who have had some issues with your broadband provider, you might get a kick out of this song. And of course, I'll play it in full at the end of my podcast. That's Comcast Connection Blues. This podcast is sponsored by Inside Higher Ed, the online source for news, opinion, and jobs for all of higher education. I also invite you to follow me on Twitter. My handle is RodsPods. As always, I post links to all of the things we talk about on my show notes at www.rodspulsepodcast.com. Well, this month, it's a little bit of a departure from my usual podcast. I think it's probably the first time I interviewed a bunch of speakers and attendees at a conference, but this is a very special conference to me. It's PADLA. It's the 12th annual meeting of the Pennsylvania, Delaware, and New Jersey Distance Learning Association. We're the regional chapter of the USDLA, and I'm on the board. This was a particularly special meeting for us because we incorporated what used to be the Villanova Tech Expo, so it was our largest meeting to date. We had well over 350 registrants and I think 30 exhibitors. It was held at Westchester University. They were really helpful and provided a wonderful venue for our meeting. I guess the main purpose of my podcast this month then is to really introduce folks to PADLA, the kind of meetings that we put on, and also to give you some good information that you could find useful if you're in the realm of e-learning, especially from our keynote speaker. Here are my interviews. The first is a clip from the introduction of the conference by Louis Strykoff, who's our executive director of PADLA. He's also director of new business development at IMS Technology Services, followed by a brief interview with Stephen Hart, who's PADLA president. He's an assistant VP at the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia. And then Will Talheimer of Work Learning Research. And he gave an excellent talk entitled Research-Inspired Learning Maximization. So we speak with him and you'll get a flavor for what he was talking about. Then I talked to Jeff Rothenberger, who is a program administrator at the Berks County Intermediate Unit. And he discusses Nearpod, a very interesting teaching app that's used on iPads. And last, Scott Badenkoff, a good friend of mine and director of academic technology at Drexel University, and some of his reflections on the differences between asynchronous versus synchronous teaching. So I hope you enjoyed the podcast, and without further ado, here we go.
I want to welcome everybody to the 12th annual Pennsylvania, Delaware, New Jersey Distance Learning Association Conference and Expo. Of course, me, I'll be running around all day today, and I probably will not get to attend many of the presentations, so I'm really depending on you to give me some feedback, to have some great takeaways and learnings, and also to seek out Rod Murray and Gwen Burbank, who will be audio recording and interviewing people. Here they are, Rod and Gwen. Why don't you stand up so everybody can see you? They'll be running around. If they come up and say, hey, we want to record something, don't think that they're from the FBI. They're from PADLA, and they're going to be posting this on Rod's Pulse. I do want to say that although we represent a very diverse group, not only in roles, but in sectors, corporate, nonprofit, higher ed, K-12, and now adding manufacturers and services as well. We're all here to learn new ideas and share our experience and resources with each other to help advance our field and meet the challenges of today and into the future.
I'm here with Steve Hart, who's the president of PADLA, and I just want to catch him to get some firsthand impressions.
Yes, hi, Rob. It's Rod. It's been an overwhelming experience, really, in many ways today, because we've seen such a huge growth in this organization over the last year. And I think it's primarily due to a lot of efforts that our good friend Louis Strickhoff has put in. But what I really feel is exciting is to see the people from education, higher education, K through 12, and the corporate world really coming together and sitting in sessions together and learning from each other around this very dynamic field and not so concentrated within their own line of work. It's such a thrill to see in each of the sessions I've attended so far that really cross-functional interplay that's gone on between people. And I think that's so exciting to see that. I'm also very excited to see the number of vendors that we have here today. When we first started this many years ago, we have three or four of them in our lobby. Today we have more than 30. I think that's just an incredible growth. It shows, I think, a great expansion of the kind of technology that's driving this business, stuff that you see every day, the machines and so on, but also the infrastructure that supports it. Many years ago, this was all about infrastructure, and now it's about lots of other types of tools and techniques that are coming in that enliven the learning and make it really accessible to people globally.
Or about the pedagogy.
Right. So we've really transcended, I think, over the years and seen the evolution and growth of this field. It still has a long way to go, I think, to catch up to, you know, the more established forms of learning, but nonetheless, I'm so excited to see the development and growth.
It's funny because this is an organization all about online, yet we have this face-to-face meeting. But there's sometimes there's just not a substitute for seeing people and getting up close. And well, I think the cross-fertilization that you mentioned between the different areas has really been great. Well, thanks a lot, Steve.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I'm here interviewing Dr. Will Thalhimer, who gave an excellent keynote talk here at the PADLA meeting. So thank you for your talk. You're mainly focused towards corporate learning, I take it. And I guess my question for you is, looking at how most higher education works, a lot of universities, such as ours, still depend on the lecture. And I guess I would ask you, what would you point faculty to who want to do a better job and actually having better outcomes with teaching in the higher ed realm?
Well, thank you, Rodney. You know, I've been spending a lot of time doing research, sort of compiling research on learning, and yes, I do work in the corporate training and development field, but I've often thought that the research that I'm compiling is relevant for everybody, you know, K to 12 teachers, university professors, you know, people helping other people, you know. And you know, what I look at is the fundamental principles. So the fundamental principles are relevant for everyone. Faculty members, they do lecture. And lecture has been shown not to be very effective. But you can be in a classroom and create really good learning. But you have to think that you're not just an information conveyor. That's not your job. Your job is to be a learning enhancer. And that might mean conveying less information, getting your students involved more in decision-making, in discussions. There's also the notion of the flipped classroom that's come up. And that's where you present them the information offline, not in the classroom. They can read it. They can look at videos. They can see your lecture. If you want to do one-way lectures, you know, do that. When they come into the classroom, that's where you actually involve them in problem solving. Give them real-world kind of cases. It'll be much more relevant for them. They'll learn at a deeper level. We're not really, you know, we all came through this system where we were lectured at, right? I've been there. I've lectured, but I've also been the recipient of lectures. And so we tend to do what we saw in the past. But that's not the only way. It's a big restriction to do that. We really need to look beyond that.
Good point. Certainly, we're helping to promote the flipped classroom. We're doing more and more online. I think using audience response systems has had some use at our institutions. What are your thoughts about using audience response systems in that sort of environment?
Actually, I've written a sort of research to practice report on audience response systems. If people go to, let's see if I get it right, audienceresponselearning.com, Quest.com, they can download a free white paper on that. And I talk about how to use questions in different ways. So I'm a big proponent. Yeah, audience response systems can do some things that you can't do in a classroom. So, for example, in a classroom, you can get people to raise their hands. But sometimes, particularly for some students, that makes them embarrassed or they're a little afraid to tell what they really, you know, they'll look around the classroom, they won't give their real honest opinion. So, you know, when you have an audience response system, it can be private. You can also use sort of demographics to sort of cut data in half. So you ask people a question, you know, are you from a rural environment or urban environment or suburban? And then you ask them another question, and then you can sort of correlate or look at, you know, what the people in the rural thought, what the people in the... And you can do this any kind of demographics, so men, women, old, young, you know, and that becomes interesting. So anyway, there's lots of ways. The key, though, is not just to use the audience response system, but to use it in a way that supports learning. So a lot of people say, oh, new technology, and I ask them a bunch of stupid questions. Well, that's not the way to go. You got to use questions that are deeper than your typical memorization questions. So again, audienceresponselearning.org, or .com. I'm not sure which. It might be both. You can get this free white paper and highly recommend it.
That's good advice. I really liked your section of your talk talking about how we use the Likert scale the wrong way or don't word those questions in a meaningful fashion. That's something I plan to sort of take back to some of our faculty. The other thing that was intriguing, which I remember from my earlier studies, is state-dependent learning. Right. I remember at... I went to school at Temple University, and Donald Overton, I don't know if you know that name, but he published back in the 70s state-dependent learning. And, you know, if you like to drink alcohol while you're learning, then you better be drinking the alcohol when you're taking the test.
Right. Well, yes and no. I mean, there are some decrements to alcohol, and I use the marijuana example.
Maybe that's a better example.
But, yeah, there's a ton of studies on this. And it's a fascinating thing. You know, most people don't get that. You know, we just think learning is learning. But we're not just picking up you know, the learning messages. We're also picking up the background context, and that has a lot to do. You know, I didn't have a chance to talk about, you know, because of the time constraints, but I use examples in my workshops where I say, you know, do you remember, you know, sometimes you might forget somebody's phone number until you look at the keypad, or you might forget your PIN, your ATM PIN. This happens to me all the time, until you're actually at the keypad. Well, it's the keypad that's reminding you of what you need to remember. Or, you know, you meet someone at a party or on the street and you can't remember their name. You can't remember where you know them from, but you know them from somewhere because it's the context. You know, maybe you knew them at church. In the church context, right, it's not there to help you remember their name or you know, whatever it is.
Yeah. Well, that's good for me to remember, because next time my wife says, oh, on the phone, how do I do such and such on the computer? I said, well, I don't have the computer in front of me. My fingers know how to do it, but I can't tell you. I can't visualize it right now until I get back to the computer,
right,
you know.
Exactly.
Well, listen, this has been my pleasure to talk to you. I really enjoyed your talk, and thank you so much.
Wow. Appreciate it, Rod. Anytime.
I'm here with Jeff Rothenberger, who just gave a very nice presentation on Nearpod, which is a product I looked at a couple of years ago, and I don't think it was quite there yet, and it was just related to used on iPads, and now I understand it's cross-platform. Now, this was a K-12 session. My main interest has been in, you know, higher ed. I'm just wondering if you know if this is being used in higher ed.
Yes.
You know?
I actually work for Harrisburg University as an adjunct and as well as Wilkes. And in my Harrisburg ed, I do educational technology at the graduate level for them. And in those presentations, I do a lot of the Nearpod presentations and getting my students engaged, because Nearpod is about getting students to be engaged with the learning and then being able to give me immediate feedback to drive my instruction so that I can look at students and say, you've got this, let's move on. I don't have to wonder and wait a week or two till they come back and say, I give them a quiz, let me grade it for the week, give it back a week later. When I do that, students, when I hand back a quiz or a test a week later, they come back to me and they say, they look at the quiz, they look at the paper, the only thing they're looking at is the grade. They're not looking to, did they learn the content, what was on that. They don't even review the questions. They're only one thing important, the grade. So when you give them the immediate feedback, which this program allows, they're now they're looking at their answers and they're saying, I made a mistake. I didn't get that one right. Oh, I put the wrong answer for this one. And it shows them what the right answer is. So they're learning from their mistakes while you're in class and going through this program.
Yeah, that sort of keys into what our keynote speaker was saying about sort of state-dependent learning. You know, you give them feedback right away, and you're sort of testing them in the same environment where you're teaching them, and hopefully that will lead to better retention.
Correct. And again, one of the components that I look at here is for teachers to be able to change the pedagogical delivery model that they're using with regards to getting students to be able to take and be an active participant in this. A lot of times we do stand and deliver, and we're just constantly giving them the content, and we're expecting them to remember. With this, we can also start looking at the formative assessment components that we're starting to ask different higher-level thinking questions in class. And instead of having students raise their hands and answer and getting one student's response, I can ask that same higher-level question to the entire class, and everybody has to give me feedback. So I get entire feedback from the entire class at the same time to see, did everybody conceptualize that component that I just taught and be able to give me immediate feedback on it. So I can put in some remembering kinds of questions if that's where I'm at, or I can take it up to the DOK, higher depth of knowledge level, higher, and ask higher-end kinds of questions as well.
It seems like it would be a great replacement in our case of using audience response systems, which tend to be very sort of rigid. And on the other hand, ones that we've had experience with are pretty well integrated with our learning management system. Is there any integration of Nearpod with learning management systems?
Well, with an LMS, basically what you can do is that's where you can take the whole entire presentation. The Nearpod will give you the embed code, so there's just one button to click and you can embed and take the entire presentation and put it into your LMS that way. There isn't any integration as far as the grading or the scoring or any of that components. That's all separate at this point. It is a new startup company. They've only been out for 3.5-4 years now. Like you said, it has grown. It was iPad only. Now it's agnostic to any platform that you're working on. And I continue to see for improvements to come down the road with, you know, as we move forward with that. And hopefully the company will continue to grow.
Well, thank you, Jeff. It was a great introduction to Nearpod. Thanks for talking to me. I'm talking to Scott Badenkoff from Drexel University. We just came out of a presentation on making online instruction worthwhile from presenters from Westchester University. So, Scott, what can you tell us about, I guess, anything you learned in the presentation or your reflection on difference between teaching online as opposed to face-to-face?
Sure, Rod. Thank you. Well, so the presenters were, in particular, Christoph presenting from Amsterdam via Skype, was making the point that an asynchronous course can actually have better results than a synchronous one because the students are actually can be required to do the reading, whereas even in a face-to-face course, you don't know if the students have done the reading. In an asynchronous course, in other words, a course where the students can essentially do it at their own time, he structures his courses with threaded discussion and other assignments so that the students basically have to do the reading in order to be at all serious in their response. Whereas in a synchronous course where you have students working with the instructor in real time in some kind of video collaboration, you don't know if they've done the reading. They can, I guess, basically BS their way through the course. I've had a lot of experience with teaching faculty how to teach online in a course that's a mixture of synchronous and asynchronous. I really do, as well as having taught in the classroom at the undergraduate level. And, you know, getting students to actually prepare for class is extremely difficult. He's definitely on the right track. Using a lot of interactive, asynchronous stuff is really effective in getting people to do reading, whether it's quizzes or discussion.
If you're teaching an online course that still has a synchronous session once a week, and the students think that they're going to learn everything in that one synchronous session and not pay attention to the asynchronous work. My first experience with teaching an asynchronous course was I didn't have any synchronous activities. It was all, well, I shouldn't say I had one because I was demonstrating some technology. They were really forced to follow along and do everything asynchronously. Having that experience, do you think you would be tempted to change how you would structure an online course?
In my course, we have 1 hour of synchronous session every week. And some faculty will just kind of stop reading the materials because they think they can get everything they need from that session. In spite of that, the synchronous session really does provide a way for people to hear each other's voices, to have an immediacy of responding to each other and me. And I think it provides something that just doing videos of me would not.
One of the things that I did in my little course was one of the first activities was to record a video giving a little biography and telling the other students about who they were and what their interests were. Yeah, so I think it is important to get the students engaged and get them, you know, like they were, like one person was saying about creating a learning community and making even an asynchronous course be personal and have the students share videos of themselves. So we did a lot of video activities, and I think that's probably important in making, and so they see my talking head on occasion. I don't do it all the time. You know, once they see my talking head and giving my little background and my weekly introduction of the course that's of the class that's coming, so I turn off the video, maybe just do the voiceover PowerPoint.
Their second point was of course around a community, as you mentioned, and that's kind of a magic bullet for colleges. I mean, everywhere, you know, if you can get students involved in athletics, they'll stay with the academic program. I think it's an important thing to try for in an online course as well. Sometimes I'm successful at it, and sometimes it doesn't work.
All right. Thanks a lot, Scott, for your reflections.
So that's all for this month. I hope you enjoyed the podcast, and I certainly want to invite all of you to attend our PADLA meetings. We have 4 bi-monthly meetings and a annual conference and expo, usually in late fall. You can join PADLA for $100. That gives you a year's membership and free entry to our annual conference and our bi-monthly meetings. And as usual, I'll post links to everything we talked about on my show notes at www.rodspulsepodcast.com. Until next time, have a great week.
Was down, nothing left to do but to drive all over town. Then I found me a hot spot and I got me online. The waiter offered bread so fresh to compliment my wine. I got the blues, the Comcast connection blues. For every other customer, this downtown isn't news. I think it's back up now, you can tell by my grin. Everything's off, never mind, I've gone offline again. I got the blues so bad, the broadband dropping blues. I got a funny kind of feeling that Comcast needs Viagra or something to help it stay up instead of hitting snooze. You know what I'm saying? Does anybody know what I'm saying? Comcast, you know what I'm saying? I said, do you know what I'm saying? Is there anybody out there? Hello?
too far from the office for DSL. Don't bother me now, cause I'm in broadband connection hell. There ain't no email, can't post to my blog. Would someone grab the Drano, cause I got a massive data clog. Silver lining in all of this is I finally have the time to go upstairs and start polishing my shoes. The sooner I'm back on, well, the merrier. We seem to be online. Oh. No carrier. Back up now, you can tell by my grin. Everything's awesome. Oh, never mind. I've gone offline again. I've gone offline. I've gone offline again.
Anybody got a dial-up connection or something? Phone plug? Teletype?
That's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to give Rod feedback. You can leave comments on his blog, send email to rod@rodspulsepodcast.com, or leave audio feedback on his comment line at 610-616-2199. The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Murray, and does not represent the official viewpoint of the University of the Sciences or any other institution or company.